Welcome everyone to JJ We podcast, and today we have a special guest directly from Lahti, Gonzalo Pereira, head coach at FC Lahti. And Gonzalo has a rich experience in coaching in Nordic countries and of course in Portugal. And this journey will take us to his coaching path and his vision and maybe the experience of football. How does it look like in globally and also in Finland? Gonzalo, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you, Yuko, for the invitation. It's always a pleasure for me to be sharing ideas about football. I like to do that a lot. So yeah, hopefully we can have a good chat about this sport we both love.
Yeah, as a young coach, you have a quite long experience in different countries as a coach or assistant coach. Can you briefly walk us through your journey as a coach?
Yes, I started as a coach when I was 18, after seeing my dreams or hopes of being a football player being difficult to make it happen. I decided since young age that I wanted to be a coach, and that's why I went then to college to take a bachelor's degree and a master's degree in football specific training methodology, as well as a post graduation in psychology, because I thought it was very, very important. After that, I've been having some experiences with youth teams, 7-a-side football to 11-a-side football, which is something that I really wanted to do, because I feel it's important for me to know all the stages of football player development. But started a bit more on a professional side, if you can say it, when I was a performance analyst to a club in Portugal called Estoril Praia with Marco Silva, which is now Fulham FC coach. And then after that, I went to Norway, was 2 years with Kongsvinger, two very good years to be honest. Then Bromo Poikarna in Allsvenska as an assistant coach as well, same in Kongsvinger with the same coaching staff. Then Riga FC, a brief adventure in Latvia. Then COVID came, back to Portugal, and then the opportunity to come here to Finland showed up, and it was something that I wanted to do because I wanted to, of course, know new cultures or new football cultures, but also to open new markets. So then after KPV, FC Lahti, here we are, and hopefully we can have a good season.
Yeah, you have experience every Nordic country except Denmark, but how do you make the difference between those countries from the cultural point of view?
I think the Norway, Sweden, and Finland culturally are not that different, to be honest. In terms of football, from what I see since 2015, which is when I first came to Norway, the football is changing a lot, not only in Norway, but also in Sweden, Finland, and then a bit all over Europe. Like you said, I don't have the experience in Denmark, but to be honest, it was something that I would love to have. But what I've seen is that I was quite surprised when I first went to Norway and I had my first adventure in Nordic countries in football, because we don't have a quite clear idea about what is football here in the Nordic countries, in Portugal. Maybe now we have a bit more because we actually have some Nordic players down in Portugal, like Vitor Gyökeres, Ausnes, Kjelderup from Norway. So I think football world is waking up a bit regarding the good work that is made here in the Nordic countries when it comes to football. But the player, technically, to be honest, is quite good. And by technically, I don't mean the 1v1s and this, which is something that we lack a bit here in Finland. I'm not sure if it's the non-ability of the 1v1. I believe on that. I think it's a bit more the mentality side and the arrogance that is needed to play in such positions like wingers, like strikers, that are a bit more different than the target man one. But in the rest of the technical abilities, first touch passing, the Nordic player is quite good, to be honest. And I was quite surprised. Obviously, the tendency that I've been watching on the last 10 years is that Norway, for example, had a way more vertical type of football than Sweden or even Finland. And now it's switching a bit, maybe the influence of Bodø/Glimt, maybe influence of some other type of player that has been produced here in the Nordic countries, but it's developing towards a more possession-based football rather than just the natural, historically, kick-and-rush influence that the Nordic countries have from England in the 90s. So I think this will be one of the biggest developments in football here in the North of.
You said you have also played football as a junior in Portugal and studied football and the sports in Portugal. Can you describe a bit about the football culture in Portugal? Why it is so important? And what is the definition of competition and this kind of a how it's so well fit in the country's whole culture?
In some ways it's very good, in some other ways it's not that good. I think here in the Nordic countries we have a multi-sport culture, which is fantastic because in terms of physical development, kinetics development of the children is quite good. In Portugal we have football and that's it. Obviously everything is fantastic around football, but the other sports struggle a bit because the tendency of a young kid to play sports is to go and do it in football. And at the end of the day, weather also plays a huge part, because we can be pretty much as kids playing outside all the time, every day of the year. Even when it rains, we don't have the snow and we don't have extremely cold weather. So actually that facilitates a lot the development of football. And then at the end of the day, what you need to play football is just friends and sometimes not even a ball, maybe a bottle of Coca-Cola or Pepsi or something, even a stone. I remember to play football with stones and Coca-Cola cans, Coca-Cola bottles. And because of that, I think it plays a huge part on why football in Portugal is important for the world of football.
How is a footballer as a profession? I think it's also quite respected profession.
For a lot of families, it's the escape. For a lot of families, it might mean that if in your family you have a guy that can make it through a proper football environment, might be the thing that puts bread and food on their table. So sometimes we actually can see in Portugal going to the extreme of having a very competitive world since very young age, but very, very young age. Even the recruitment in the top teams is getting earlier and earlier. People recruiting kids when they are 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, which is a bit crazy to be honest, in my opinion. But yeah, it's a very, very competitive world, not only on the player side, but also on the coaching. From a coaching perspective, is a very, very different than what we have here in Finland.
What about education? I think that's quite good also. You have universities and there you can study football and sports. I think we have limited opportunities for that in Finland. Mm-hmm. So how do you see that influence to football as a sport?
Definitely it comes once again from the whole importance of football in Portuguese culture. We have colleges that nowadays are forming students in order to be coaches, which is something that is a bit kind of a fight, to be honest, with the former players and the federation path. In the last few years, actually, things have been a bit more smooth in that way, because there has been a lot of discussion. It looks like in Portugal, the conversation is either you are from ex-player or former player path, and the ones from the academic background are just rubbish, or the opposite, which is not true. And then at the end of the day, you actually need the strong points from each one or each side, because obviously with the development of football, the academic background is very important nowadays, because the science and the sports science is playing a bigger part day by day. But also being inside the locker room, body language, the feelings, feeling naturally involved in locker room and teams is something that you don't get overnight. You get by experience, you get by spending hours inside the locker room, you're getting by being in different contexts, you get them by being in different locker rooms with different people, and that's what builds up the competence. So actually, in my perspective, the coaching staff should have both sides, to be honest, because each one of the sides has his own values.
What are your differences between the Southern Europe or Portugal and the Nordic countries, the leadership and the club leadership? I have heard and maybe also I have seen a couple of visits in Portugal that it's a quite hierarchical organization, that the boss is a boss. And we have here in the Nordic countries, we have a quite flat organization. We accelerate discussion and this kind of a communication between different people, no matter of what level the people are. How do you see that? Is it the big difference?
It is different, definitely. I think once again, it comes from the culture. I think the idea of flat hierarchy here in the Nordic countries and equality is something that is very, very, very good for society. There are some things, because football is a very specific world, and normally, it's not normal, but some of the things that work quite good in general life than in football tend to create some problems. Obviously, people are different. People are a bit more cold here in the Nordic countries. You are a bit more, I don't know if warm is the right word, but passion, I don't know, maybe a bit more related to Latin culture. But yeah, definitely in football there is a bigger hierarchy in Portugal than here in Finland. Why is that? I'm not sure. Maybe because football in Portugal is a bit more developed, and it's a very, very important part of people's life, which means that football within the clubs needs to be taken very, very serious. And in order for things to work properly, then strong leaderships are needed. And by this, I don't mean that we should not have a bit flatter way of looking at things, but I think it has been working quite okay so far. So that might be one of the reasons, to be honest, because the decision making is something that is very, very important in football, and sometimes having a lot of people involved is maybe not the best thing.
How it has developed during the last 20 years, for example, in Portugal, the culture, what has been the biggest change in football and the football culture in Portugal?
I think one of these is what we talked about. It's the academic part is taking his own space in football, to be honest. And this is one of the biggest changes. Obviously, maybe not on the last 20, but since Mourinho showed up, we actually managed to create in Portugal an identity of training methodology. From the Germans with the gegenpressing, or from the Spanish with this positional play. Those two are clearly game and match related, or playing style related methodologies, while we in Portugal have something related to the training methodology, which is the tactical periodization. And after that, actually, we as a country, we as coaches managed to find an important room for us to develop in the world of football. And I think that's the biggest difference in culture. Obviously, something changed a bit longer than 20 to 25 years. If we see or if we analyze the Portuguese national team results on the last 22 years, 25, they are way different than they were in the previous year. So something has been done good. But in my perspective, from my coaching point of view, Mourinho gave us opportunity to find our own space in football.
Clubs, and especially the big clubs in Portugal, are football factories or the sports factories and professional player factories. How does it impact to the football itself?
You see, obviously, we cannot say we are one of the top five leagues. So in Portugal, you have the need to sell players because the revenue and the profit the club make by producing their own players. And you have Benfica is the biggest case of it. Also now Sporting Porto was some years ago. But making revenue through producing players, investing in their academies, because that's 100% profit. When you sell a player, and this is actually, we can talk about the love for the sport, you can talk about the love for the whole environment about or around football, but at the end of the day, it's a money ball. You need the money to survive, you need the money to give better conditions to the people within your organization, you need the money to develop your own academies so you can develop more players, sell more, and get more revenue. So football has been growing towards, in Portugal at least, producing their own players and trying to sell. Also because the TV rights in Portugal, in my perspective, are not managed in the best way possible. So actually the clubs need to sell so they improve their own conditions.
Let's go a bit more holistic and the football itself in the international level. What are the biggest changes in football and what are maybe the future trends in football in a global level? What are the drivers behind those changes?
To be honest, one of the things is cultural influence. And here, if you look at history, we all remember Brazil from 72 or 82, I can't be precise, when they had a fantastic team where they played very good and they didn't win anything. They also had the Netherlands with a fantastic 4-3-3 and fantastic players that won a lot. Now we have Spanish influenced a bit more by La Masia with FC Barcelona. We also have a way of playing for the Germans, which is pretty much putting pressure all the time on the ball. Italy has always been having their own space. So I think the culture influence, especially national team wise, has been playing a huge part on the development of different players. Also at the club level, I think is a bit more dependent on who is the coach, who is the philosophy. Things are way more unstable at the club level than they are at the national team level. So things vary a bit more. The tendencies, I think football player nowadays is way more complex and the understanding of the game is way higher, or it's getting higher any time. To read some weeks ago this comment from Gary Neville that in Premier League now centre backs are spending a lot of time on the ball and we don't see the magicians or the playmakers on the ball that much. And I think that's one of the biggest changes. Centre backs nowadays are the playmakers. Centre backs nowadays need to be probably the most complete players on pitch. And why is that? Football is generating a lot of money. The natural instinct of human being is to defend himself when tough times come. So naturally, the teams prepare themselves very good to defend, which forces the lowest players on pitch to spend more time on the ball, to force them to take good decisions and be the playmakers. And this is related to money. To be honest, I think we're going to see more and more of low, medium pressure defending blocks. We're going to see a lot more of defenders on the ball. I remember that two or three teams have attempted to bring the goalkeeper higher up on pitch to try to help on the build-up. I think Thiago Motta did that with Bologna, if I'm not wrong, and he was doing that with PSG in the youth teams. I think Kups here in Finland, if I'm not wrong, last season did that a bit with the goalkeeper. So some of the tendencies are going to be to have reduced spaces to play, know how to move the opposition block, know how to create spaces. But we're going to see way more center backs and defenders on the ball, for sure.
But does it mean that the intensity of the football game has been going up last
year?
Or is it?
I don't know. To be honest, what is intensity on football? Because we all use this word, but what is intensity on football?
Maybe I can put it that you are using the whole pitch more efficiently. You are pressing the whole from the high level more often, and you are putting the, so that's maybe I mean that the intensity and also the transitions when you are losing the ball. So the transitions are very important in football. So
definitely. Definitely. The transition for me, the moment we lose the ball is the most important one in football by far. And none of the other moments are even closer to the importance of this one. Why is it most dangerous thing is to lose the ball, being a bit disorganized? And here is one of the things that, to be honest, I don't know how, because I've been here not that long, how Finnish coaches or Veikkaus Liiga team, for example, look at the preparation of their teams. But one of the things that I've been telling all the time, and even here in FC Lahti, I pretty much say this every day, is that we cannot only think offensively when we are attacking, and we cannot only think defensively when we are defending. Football is too complex, and it's a global game. And in these moments, when we have the ball, if we are not ready to lose it, then we're going to be disorganized and our opponent can create something. And when we have the ball, when we don't have the ball and we win the ball, if we are not organized while we are defending to get a good counter-attacking moment, then we cannot take advantage of the disorganization of the opposite team. So football is getting more complex. It's normal that players need to be a bit better prepared to come up with new solutions all the times, because when you go out and play against, for example, against Ubi Nolan earlier yesterday, I had to prepare the game in a different way that I prepared Komovic's game. Now against Salpa, I need to prepare it all the way, because all of them will bring me different problems. So I need to be ready to face all of them.
Okay, today is also the semifinals of the Champions League, and there are pretty good teams. They play very good football, and Barcelona is also back in business after several years of struggling. How do you see those? Are the beautiful game back in business, or is it the same football but the different clubs?
It's not the same football. If I'm not that experienced in football, also I'm not that old, so actually I haven't had a pretty good idea how football changed all over the years. But since I am aware or conscious of football, I've seen football changing two or three times. And I think the first one is definitely maybe a bit more related to my own culture. When Mourinho starts with Porto, goes to Chelsea, I think the tactical importance and also the mental side in football started to play a huge cut. Then obviously when Barcelona takes Guardiola to be first team coach, then I think everyone in the world realized that football was changing, because suddenly everyone wanted to have a fantastic counter-pressing. Everyone wanted to have tiki-taka and this. Then suddenly, I think Mourinho with Real Madrid changes it a bit again, a bit more direct, less touches, to be honest. With Barcelona and Guardiola, this Mourinho with Real Madrid was one of the teams that I really enjoyed to watch playing football. But then once again, I think Klopp did a fantastic job on this gegenpressing with Liverpool's, not only now at the end of his adventure there with Liverpool, but at the start you could see that as well. Then what City did with Guardiola, again changing it a bit, more or less the same foundation of tiki-taka, but in a different way, because obviously the players were a bit different and Premier League is a bit different than La Liga. So I've seen it changing it now. Regarding the teams that are not playing in Champions League, as Luis Enrique a bit going back to what he was with his Barcelona, if we well remember, then he took pretty much the culture of Guardiola's football there, changed it a bit, made it a bit more vertical, a bit faster attacking than Guardiola with tiki-taka. So I think PSG is one of the biggest favorites to win Champions League in my perspective. Also, Arsenal is quite a good team. And then on the other side, we have Barcelona with their own culture from La Masia against a team that is pretty much the most different one from the four that is in Champions League. But this is actually quite nice to see different teams with different ways of playing, reaching semi-final of the most important competition in the world. So they are the ones actually who set tendencies for all the others. So quite curious to see who actually is going to win it.
Yeah, so what I'm hearing that you say that football is evolving and changing all the time and adapting to the new environment and adapting also the opposite side of tactics and so on. And it's maybe faster and faster in the different periods of time of for example, the transitions. But let's go to the junior football. How does this evolution impact to the player development in a junior phase football? Yeah. So what are the impacts that we have to take into consideration?
It's 100% impact, because to be honest, top teams are the one who will define the tendencies for all the others. And all the others mean not only the not top teams, but medium level teams, the lower leagues teams. So those are the ones who define everything. And then also sports science has been taking a huge cut here on the development individually, the player. So the development of the youth player needs to be in a way that prepares themselves to face competitive context. And you can only develop them in order to reach competitive levels if you replicate it a bit on your day by day environment. And by this I mean that the demands that the football player have. Also in Portugal, I can give you an example. I don't know, Benfica Sporting Porto, the biggest academies in Portugal. If you go and see a day by day of a U14 and U15 player, obviously they need to spend time at school. But the level of professionalism on these teams is nuts. It's just something that that is very present every day. Why? Because those teams need to produce plays for the first team, and they need more or less to replicate the context, obviously, with the adaptations that are needed for such young age. But they need to replicate this context. Otherwise, when you reach the senior level, which is very, very, very competitive at the moment, if you are not ready, you're not taking a second chance. Why? Because there is somewhere else, a guy in this world, that is ready to take those demands. So I think that things need to replicate a bit what are we aiming for. If we are aiming for to produce players for top level, then we need to replicate that context a bit.
Yeah, let's go to the competitiveness of the junior in Portugal or in the top level, but also in Finland. Do we have the environment competitive enough to produce players for the first teams in Finland, Finnish context?
I have seen Norway doing, I've seen Sweden doing. I don't see why we shouldn't do that in Finland as well. However, I think here is a bit more on Paulo Lito/government side. And the biggest thing is the government needs to recognize football play career. And at the moment, they don't do that well. So it's normal than a player when you reach, I don't know, the age of 24, 25, 26, if you are not playing abroad where actually football is taking a bit more serious, or you're not playing Vekas League where you get more or less good money, then you actually give up and they are going to be dentists or they're going to, I don't know, two other jobs. This is definitely one of the things. And after this thing is changed, then naturally all of the things are going to change around it. I think coaching is something that needs to change fast here in Finland. Why is this? I saw the same, for example, in Norway, and I'm making comparisons constantly with Norway because it was my first adventure abroad. But coaching cannot be handled, cannot be made by parents, to be honest, because that gives an idea of a bit more recreational or a bit funnier way, which is vital, but in a demanding context. If you want to produce players, you need to have the tools, and the tools are very important. The coaching is very, very important, because when you start with young players, they are pretty much a blank sheet. So we actually have the opportunity to start creating profiles to guide their own development and their own learning process. And then I don't see why should a parent who is a mechanic or works at a bakery shop should be the one who is actually the team's coach. And this is one of the biggest things, to be honest.
So also discuss this issue about the profession of footballer in Finland, or the professional footballer. Our salaries are pretty low, even in Veikkausliiga, the average salaries and the young player salaries are low, and the parents and the society is giving that you have to study first, to take the serious profession and then play football. If I heard right, you said that we have to get more respect to the footballer as a profession in Finland. Otherwise, it's not going to be big thing in Finland. Am I correct? Or
don't get me wrong, I'm not saying for people not to study and just play football. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that there is space for everything, and if people want to develop on football, and this is one of the things I told you before, that there are some things that work fantastically for the society, and giving opportunities and education for people is definitely one of the pillars of any society. So let's make it clear here. But there are some things that need to be improved if you want to develop football, and coaching is one of them. Making a bet on a football career is one of them. For example, if you see what Spain did with sports, I don't know, 30 years ago, making a huge bet by the government. And now if we see, tell me one sport where you don't have either a Spanish team or a Spanish individual on top of their of that sport. So actually can also build up careers and sporting careers. Not everything is about business, not everything is about industry, because people have different needs, people have different passions, people want to follow different paths. And I think everyone deserves an opportunity to be taken serious. If you want to have a more serious football career, if you want to have a more serious human resources manager career or any other industry career.
How do you see those top leagues in Finland, the Veikkausliiga and Ykkösliiga? How competitive those are to develop players for example, international fields?
If by national field we mean making the path to national team.
Or international, I mean that to make money, the salary and the future as a footballer. Mm-hmm. So are these good enough levels in Finland that you can jump from the Veikkausliiga to other fields internationally? Or what are the bad as a football professional player or a junior who wants to be a footballer? So what are the tracks to go?
To be honest, I told you that a Finnish footballer has quality and period. It's no discussion. And we start to seeing not only Finnish, but Nordic players getting a bigger role especially in European football. You have Radetzky from the national team. You had some other examples. Actually, now is the moment where you start getting Finnish clubs to sell players, but the revenue is not that good. So why is it not that good? Why players from Kups go to Djurgården by 1.2 million, while players from, I don't know, youth academies from, I don't know, mid-level in Spain are sold to some other club by 5, 6, 7 million. These things are the answers we need to find. Are the questions we need to find answers for? Is it developing? I think so. Could be a bit faster. I'm pretty sure of that. And that comes once again in my perspective from government side. It comes in my perspective from institutional side that rules football in Finland, that is Paavo Lehto. Because when you start taking it a bit more serious, and you have the example once again of the other Nordic countries around Finland, if you take it more serious, then the speed of development is faster, and the opportunities for the young kids to go to Veikkausliiga are there. The opportunities for the young kids to go to Veikkausliiga, be there 2 or 3 years and then being sold, are there. You have Lee Mata that went to Portugal 1.5 year ago, I think. We just need to create a good environment where they can be developed.
I have said this podcast before that my opinion is that, for example, the Veikkausliiga clubs or teams, first teams, they have to take younger players to the first team more, or the players younger from 16 to 18 and start to develop there, not 22, 23 years old youngsters, but earlier. That's the trend also in the international football, that they take earlier and younger players, and then they develop them. They make some pressure also that, hey, now you have to shine. What do you think that? Because I think it has been in a pretty, and also in Veikkausliiga, there are quite some of the clubs are quite old. Average age is pretty old.
Yeah, it could be. To be honest, I don't think age is the thing. Is the player ready to play at that level or not? Why it happens here in Finland? Maybe because youth teams don't have proper conditions to develop. So actually, when a player reaches the age of 15, obviously there are some exceptions, okay? When a player reaches the age of 15, the question is he ready to perform in Veikkausliiga? That's the question we need to find an answer for. Is he ready to play Veikkausliiga? Is he ready to perform? Is he ready to be stable in Veikkausliiga? Or is just playing 2 minutes or three during a season, then he doesn't fit and we kick him out? Yeah. Is he ready to perform? Is he ready to take the team to the next level? Obviously, we know that any young player will have ups and downs, and that's a natural thing. But that's the way I think obviously, I've never been in a Veikkausliiga team, but I think that's the path. Can they finally start fighting for something? Can they actually be the guarantee that get the player to be in top six? Because I think the money is a bit different. Or can they help their teams to reach Europe, which is completely different? Can those guys help? Actually, in 2024, OIK was with Conference League, making 4 points. Who are the guys that are 16, 17, 18-year-old that can actually make them win matches in Europe? Because this is a bit bigger than just putting either 25 or 15-year-old. Fortunately, we have some exception. Now, Pyry Mäntu is doing fantastic with OIK, brilliant player. We have some other examples like Nzoko with Inter. I think if we take it a bit more serious, football here in Finland, naturally, the conditions for these younger players to strive are gonna be there. But we cannot expect that people that go from B juniors or B junior league to Veikkausliiga and they are gonna be dominant there, and in 2 years they're gonna be sold, because the gap is too big. It's just too big.
Why is that it is too big?
Kidu is 17 years old. How long has he had proper coaching? How many hundreds of trainings did he lose being coached by the mechanic or being coached by the guy that works in the bank? How many hours is this? Because science says that you need 10,000 hours of practice in order to become an elite in any sport. If out of those 10,000, we use 9,000 with people that don't have knowledge to do that, how do you think you're going to affect the development of the player? How can we expect people to be top on football player development or any other sport, not only football?
So that's also the coaching and the quality of teams and the whole junior path, that it's not maybe demanding enough.
I agree 100% with what you said. Definitely is not demanding. How are we going to solve it? Because everyone has identified the problem. Everyone knows what the problem is. But we don't move from what to how to make things better. And this is the thing that we need to do here in Finland. It's nothing else. It's put hands on the work and start changing things. Who has the responsibility to do that? I think my head is a bit clear, but...
It's also, they have pushed quite a lot, actually, the Palloliitto, that Palloliitto makes this kind of demands for the leagues and the junior leagues. However, the clubs are quite also pivotal points and here. So do we make those players, or do we develop players at the club level good enough? And is it the... Do we have a too wide or the big gap between clubs? And I think, I do not know what is the right, but the fact is that we do not produce as much as Sweden, as much as Norway, and definitely not as much as Denmark players to international fields. And it's not about the volume. Okay, Sweden has 10 million people, Norway and Denmark, similar sizes compared to Finland. But we are the least, we are the bottom producer. And we are discussing this, but as you said, that now we have to take the gloves and make it happen.
Yeah, I agree. And once again, if we discuss it very well and we do nothing, then it's worth nothing, to be honest. The thing is that those guys culturally football has a different weight than here in Finland. Allsvenska and football is something that is present in Swedish culture in a different way than here in Finland. If you go and see Allsvenskan matches, the stadiums are full, which doesn't happen that often here in Finland. Actually, I don't remember to see one match here in Finland where the stadium was full. Norway faced the same problem 10 years ago. We also could not see a stadium full, except obviously in the cup final. It was the year where, by average, the clubs had more attendance at the stadium, at the club level as well. I don't know, promoting events, creating opportunities to get society a bit more connected with the club, might start there and then start growing up. Might be, I'm not sure, to be honest. I also don't have a straight answer or a direct answer to give it to you, but I see lots of areas where football could be developed here.
Yeah. Let's go a bit a different topic and talent. We are this kind of, as I mentioned you, the intensity. You ask what is intensity, the definition that we are speaking this kind of words. But another one is a talent. How do you describe talent in football? I mean, in a younger player, that somebody says, oh, this is a talented player. How do you describe it?
I think that is very difficult to describe, to be honest. But I think there are very different ways of talent in football. For me, is the ability of players with different characteristics in different contexts to find a way of being successful and being dominant. And then different players, there are some with 1v1 and they have very huge talent in 1v1 situations and the speed and these. Then there are some others who are a bit slower, but on their brains, they are just fantastic because they see and analyze and take decisions 3, 4, 5, 10 seconds before everyone else. And this is a form of talent. And also all of this is connected to a hardworking ethic, routines, because being mentally prepared is also a way of talent in my perspective. So quite difficult to give you a straight answer, but I think talent can be expressed in different ways.
So talent is hardworking, but what about the mental side?
I think talent is nowadays in football needs to be hard work because it's very competitive football. But talent is, for me, find a way of being successful, knowing my limitations, knowing my strength points, and knowing very well the context I'm involved in. That's what talent is, in my opinion.
Yeah, in a sense, I have discussed also with different coaches and also players that and one maybe conclusion in my mind is that the mental side or the mental
Definitely.
Strength and the resilience makes mm-hmm. it makes the footballer, how to say, top or average. That you have this kind of a skills, you have physiological capabilities, but then can you execute those in different dynamic environment is
exactly.
about mentally prepare to do it?
At the end of the day, is the mental side the most important. Let's be very clear here. If you are not well on the mental side, you cannot analyze tactically the game, so you cannot take the better decision. If you are not well mentally, then you cannot use the technical resource that is adaptable to that time or in a bigger perspective, the technical, tactical thing. So definitely having a strong mentality is something that we need to be very aware of. And nowadays, not that experience in general life, because once again, I'm still young and learning in this world. Still, we're protecting people too much in society, to a point where people don't know how to deal when they are not successful. They are not successful fast. We are living in an era where kids or general people have an iPhone or a smartphone. You click three times on the screen and you have everything you want.
Easily. Yeah.
Yeah. This data is not suitable for you. Just download another one and you go. And this is slowly transferring to society. In general, people are not that resilient anymore because they want very, very fast results, obviously, because the context demands it. The context demands fast results. But yeah, I think on the mental side, we need to go back to what we were, or maybe not to go back, but to adapt now a bit to this world, because resilience will always be in any era a very important part of overcoming difficulties of any learning process. And those learning processes are going to be full of ups and downs. But everything is fantastic. But when the low points come, we have the resilience to go after the upside of this mistake I've made. If so, then I think we are on the right path. If we just give up, then you're going to find another career. But you're going to be a guy that gives up in everything in life, because if you don't find fast the answer we want, yeah, you're going to be searching for another, transferring a bit to football as well.
Let's go. Another side of the talent football player is a talented coach. Mm-hmm. And the coaching abilities to make players better and work harder and find their potential. How do you see the coaches? Are we, as coaches, do we have this kind of a skills to make this happen in the long run? Or do we have a short wins focus? Because I define a bit more, because I have discussed with the Veikkausliiga coaches and junior coaches and the Palloliitto development persons. And they say that, okay, Palloliitto said that there are young people or players who has the potential, but the coaches are not willing to take them in the first team squad. And they do not give enough time, playing time. So that's maybe the question is that do we or do coaches have enough focus and long-term focus, especially to develop players?
It's a...
Or to, big, yeah, this is...
It is the highest level here in Finland. And we cannot expect at the higher level where people have pressure that we or top football coaches are going to be there. Yeah, because just saying they need to give opportunities for the young kids, this is very easy, especially for the ones who sit behind the desk the whole day and are never on pitch. That's very easy. We need to do this and need to do that and need to do that. But do you know the context? Are they ready to perform? Because we might be destroying careers by putting people in contexts where they are not ready for. And this needs to be taken into consideration. Obviously, if the player is ready, then yes, he needs to be given opportunity. But the main question you need to answer is he ready? Is he ready at least to have those ups and downs? And does he have a strong mentality to when he makes mistakes, he corrects them so he develops? This is the thing. It's not just opening our mouth and saying, yeah, we need to give opportunities to younger people because this is a development or we are a development country. No, we are not. Finland is still trying to find its own space in European football. And we need to face that reality. And when we establish this country in European football, then we can start being or looking at it in a different way. Because that's what all the countries did first. We need to establish, and don't get me wrong, Yuko, I'm not here saying that the young players are not good enough. My team is the fourth youngest team in Nuka's Liga, and I have Jesiko Academia and Klubi Nolanelli, who are junior teams. And I like a lot to work with young players. But the thing that I've been listening here when people talk to me about that is that we just want to rush players into contexts where they are not ready for. And Finland, once again, needs to have teams that perform in Europe, needs a national team that is good enough to qualify to European championships like you did in 2020, I think. That's what you need to do. How are you going to do this? That's the thing. How are coaches looking at this? How can you ask Toke to go to matches against Betis and win it with 16-year-old? Are they ready?
Yeah, yeah. That's really difficult for the coaches because coaches, they are trying to win the matches and matches with the resources they have. But also, I think in a question are they ready for the context and the positions? Some of the coaches say that, okay, we, for example, let's take a wing back, left wing back, that we do not have good Finnish junior players for that position. That's just an example. And then we take, for example, now I read that, okay, from Nigeria, they imported three players, young players, to Ase Oulu.
Ase Oulu.
So I of course ask I'm a association chairman. I ask these questions that how could we provide from our junior path three players, good enough junior players to play Ase Oulu if we take the whole Finland? So do we have enough players to fulfill, or do we have to take them from abroad? I'm not against taking players from abroad. Of course, that's the that's the one solution for the problem if they have a resource problem. So, but nevertheless,
should not be the first option.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I just ask that we have to provide more players, and I think you have answered pretty well. That we have to have this kind of a more demanding environment to develop players to play Ykkösliiga and to play at the Veikkausliiga. And how to do that is a long-term focus and also Palloliitto impact. But nevertheless, I ask also the question that not only players' context, but also coaches' mentality. Are the coaches ready to give the opportunity and give another opportunity if the first one is going to be a mistake or a failure? So that's maybe my...
Yeah, I get it. I cannot answer on behalf of the other coaches. Yeah, what I can tell you is, with me, obviously, people, when they get the opportunities, because I see potential on them. And I'm quite aware that sometimes are going to be fantastic, sometimes are not going to be that fantastic.
Yeah.
For example, Vilho Wovila is one of the examples. It was with Dempe last season, relegated to Ikonen. He's a player with very, very, very... in Finland, because his own characteristics are completely different from what Finnish football produces, and actually it can fit a gap in Finnish football, which is wingers that are fast and 1v1 very strong. But he hasn't had always the best matches.
Yeah.
And the thing is, do I think he is able to perform at this context? Yes, definitely. That's why he's with us. Am I aware that he's going to fail sometimes? Yeah. But does he need a second chance and a third and a fourth and a fifth? Yeah, definitely. And then actually, yesterday, we win the match in Helsing with two goals from Hill. Will he always be dominant? I don't think so. But what I'm thinking is he is ready to play at Tikos Liga. This is the right context for him, to be honest. And with the potential he has, he's on the right context to become better. But yeah, sir, personally, I think to give Hilo and other youngsters, don't get me wrong, and other youngsters chances for them to make mistakes. Yeah. But I don't know what the other coaches think.
Yeah, this is the never ending stories, because it's an argument without any this kind of end result, because it's evolving that, okay, do we have enough players, young players? And I think every club, they want to have this kind of that the own players are going to the first team, but it's not going to happen so often. Because I do not know, is it the environment or context or the player skills or capabilities or coaches' mm-hmm. attitudes or club leadership or whatsoever. But nevertheless, my maybe this kind of a mission is to support that. Let's look at also that alternative.
Yeah, definitely.
And you cannot look that too long, that the players are going to be the this kind of a good point from 16 to 20 years old. They are losing that momentum. Mm. So that's my maybe.
Exactly. It's to find a good context. And at the end of the day, this goes back to what we talked at the start of this conversation. It's by selling own products that you create more revenue and more profit for your club. It's not by buying them from the club X, developing and selling it to the club Z. This is because you're going to lose in the middle of this process money. And you have Benfica's case, Ajax case, selling clubs and selling own products. And then the profit is huge because of that. Obviously, different clubs have different contexts, and different contexts have different demands. And at the end of the day, clubs need to win. That's the thing. And here in Finland, we are lacking clubs that can be stable in Europe, because each 3 points in Europe means 1 million euros, yeah. And that's one in an evening. You can win close to 1 million euros in an evening, and that if you use that money good, then you can develop more players, you can develop them better, not more but better. So then in the future, we can start seeing Oiko only with homegrown players. We can start seeing Coops going to Conference League as well. Maybe Oiko to Europa League, Ilves, Esiko, and these clubs starting to fight for something more than just being happy by being the kings in their kindergarten.
Yeah, and that's also what I'm maybe aiming at, that the this kind of a selling players to international fields like Matias Siltanen and to Hugh Gordon is 1.2 million. It's a faster way to earn money to make own processes better. It's faster than success in Veikkausliiga 1 year, because the money is coming faster. So if you are good process behind the club, and you can sell two players annually, or two, three players. It depends on the money. So it gives also, it fosters your process. And now if you focus only the competition itself, it's not actually where the money comes from. Of course, the European Conference League, and so they will give, for example, to HJK money, but you have to make it happen in Conference League. You have to qualify first. But that's maybe my point, that the other clubs in Denmark and Sweden and in Norway, they are selling players, and we have to understand that the selling players is good stuff.
Definitely, and it's one of the pillars. But do you think it's the fastest? Because I don't agree. Because I think Siltanen has been developing on the last 13, 14 years.
Yeah, it's not the fast.
About the investment.
Yeah. That's true. Yes, if we take the whole junior path, But I mean that. If you have a good club with a good young player processes, development processes, good teams, every year you have a good consistent, process like they have in Benfica, they have in Porto. So in a consistent way you produce players, and that's because Matias Siltanen is the end of the cycle. But there are coming more and more players, like Kups has this year also young players coming. But nevertheless, what you said to you yourself, the potential player potential. How do you as a coach now? You as a coach, how do you see the potential of the player? What are the things you are looking at?
That's quite a good chance. I think mental side is one of the first things. How can he deal with unsuccess? Does he go after it again, or does he resignate to mistake? Can he learn? How fast is the speed, the learning speed? Arrogance. And by arrogance, I don't mean kids being idiots. I mean the arrogance of, I made a mistake, give me the ball again because I'm going to go at you. This arrogance, the way you deal with the mistake is the most important. Making mistakes is the most important thing in a learning process. Then you know how to deal with it or not. So this mental side is something that I like a lot. Then obviously, how can you adapt? Can you cope with the environment? Can you develop? Are you humble enough to listen or not? These are the biggest things. And then technical quality you have to have. It's no other chance here. Let's be direct to the point. You need to be good mental. You need to have technical resources, physical resources. You can develop them. But obviously, there are some players who are a bit more ready than others physically. And then I think, if you look at young players and potential, tactical wise, I think it's one of the last parts. Of course, if we just analyze the basics, and the basics is not more than being successful in bigger structures than 3v3 or 4v4. If he dominates a 3v3 and 4v4, he is mentally ready to cope with a senior environment and has the technical ability, then the rest will come, for sure.
What do you think? This was the first time I read, it was 2-3 weeks ago. Some newspaper or some internet ad or story? But Guardiola said that the Nunez is not intelligent player enough to play number 6 pivota player or number 8 or number 10. And I was like, okay, this is an interesting topic. So what is your opinion about intelligence and the intelligent player? Because that was the first time I read this kind of a direct.
If my other number 6 was Rodri, Yeah. And previously, I have had Busquets and Xabi Alonso. That I have to tell that Matheus is not clever enough. But Guardiola is the same coach that 2 seasons ago when he signed Matheus from Wolves, he said that Matheus was the most intelligent from the squad. So here. Be honest, I don't know. Maybe the game switched a bit. Maybe Mateusz switched a bit. But yeah.
But what is your opinion about the? Because this is quite the potential. We have discussed also this kind of a terminology that potential, player development, intelligence, intelligent player. But what is your definition of intelligent player?
Is a guy that knows his limitations, his strength points, knows the context, and can find a way to be successful.
And have ability to execute the plans he has.
Obviously.
In his mind, with exactly. Technical and yeah. So that's the. We had discussed the skills and in Finnish football, the technical skills. That are we technically good enough, or do we use too much energy to compensate the technical disadvantage we have? Because we are not focusing too much this kind of a technical skills in the younger phase. But that's maybe what what I'm aiming at this topic.
Mm-hmm. Oh, but what is technique in football then? Are we technique telling that people need to be 1v1 strong? Or are we thinking that technique is something that is separated from the other dimensions of football? Because this is not just putting cones and dribble with the ball. You cannot touch the ball you cannot touch the cones with the ball. It's not this. It's technical, as always, a tactical answer to be, or tactical problem to be answered, always.
Yeah.
Do I have the physical capacity to execute these technical skills? Because this technical working it analytically or separate from the others, it doesn't make sense in my head. Maybe it makes sense when you are 4, 5, 6, 7 years old. Maybe 7 is already too late, and you don't know, or is a different movement, or the coordination of the kid is still not good. Maybe we need to decrease the complexity of the drills we do, and that we're doing by going from the most complex to the most analytical one. That I understand. Is it a new move? Is it a new technical resource? That I understand. But all the rest, when they know how to pass the ball, how to have a first touch, how to dribble, you need to put this inside a game-like situation, because otherwise you're just losing time.
Yeah.
And you're losing these 10,000 hours that you should be using in another way.
Yeah, that's also I that this kind of a technical, tactical, mental, and other is not and physiological. Those are, you are holistic. There is one player who has different skills, but maybe in the technical sense, I say my is that you, if you have a good enough skills, so you have more time to think. And more time to execute your plans. You are not using your energy to make that, for example, the first touch is bad. So it's a 3 meter, so 2 meters from your feet. So you have more time to make it look like very easy. It was a one time I realized this kind of this is not good, but when the Barcelona was visiting in Helsinki and they played against HJK. And many years ago, so I was with my son there and I look at, Barcelona, it was almost a B team, but they won 6-0. But it looks so easy when the touches came, the passes and so on. And when it comes to HJK, it was so, everything was so difficult.
Yeah.
So it.
What are the big...
So I said that even I was that surprised that the beautiful football for me is it's a fast, that's it easy, and it looks like it's nothing magic. Mm-hmm. It's such a smooth and everything is so fluent. It's going like a river.
Exactly. But what are the demands that those players from OIKO were involved with, both matches or even in training?
Yeah. And what are the competition level compared to other in Finland? So are those different compared to, but of course they are different. But nevertheless, what is your, we are ending our discussion, but let's go to the FC Lahti and your philosophy as a coach. What do you try to do in Lahti?
Win matches.
What kind of a football you want to win matches?
Oh, we here in FC Lahti, we need to understand that the club is changing a lot. Obviously, changed competitive level compared to what they have been doing in the previous year. And that demands a change of identity, if we want to call it. And by identity, I don't mean just the playing style. Everything. I think if we take this 2025, it's a good opportunity for us to develop. Then I think the future of the club is going to be bright. I cannot spend time by just moaning about what happened in 2024. Reality is there, face it, and like we have been talking throughout this conversation, learn with the mistakes, correct them, and move forward. And one of the reasons why I wanted to come here is because people from the board and the people that contacted me gave me the opportunity to develop a new identity. And this is the thing that we are trying to develop here in every single area you can imagine that is directly involved with the first team here. Okay. The type of football that I want to see is a type of football that can create goal chances from every space on the pitch. Either we are defending or attacking. And here, once again, yes, when we are defending, we can create goal chances as well, as long as we are prepared then to attack when we win the ball. And obviously, here related to the supporters in Lahti is, I want a football that creates emotions. I want a football that is passionate. I want a football that represents good Lahti people. I want a football that represents good, the love that Lahti people have for FC Lahti. And I want a football that when a young kid goes to Ski Stadium and says that in 10 days or 15 days, he wants to go back and see FC Lahti's first team. Again, because it creates good moments, good memories, good excitement, and help to build up his passion not only for FC Lahti but for football. So it's pretty much this.
What is, you said that the FC Lahti is now the fourth youngest team in Ykkösliiga. So what is the younger? You have said already, but in summarize this that what is the young player's role in your first team?
Young player's role in our first team now is a player that needs to fight to be in starting 11, that needs to develop every day on a training pitch, knowing that he has a context where we can get the opportunity if he works good and better than the others, because it's not only working good, obviously, you need to be better than the others or better than your teammates. And he's involved with a context that challenges him, that motivates him, and that gives him the opportunity to be better. At the end of the day, we decided to keep the young core that 2024 team had, and that had a reason behind. They have quality, they are good players, and we want to see them performing, and want to see how can they cope with this demanding environment when they get the opportunity. So this was the reason behind.
How do you describe yourself as a coach? What are your personalities and your key features?
You want the honest answer? I don't know. I don't know. Well, it's not that I don't know. I'm telling I don't know because I've been coaching since I'm 18. So now this is my 17th year as a coach, but I'm feeling I'm not that experienced. If we see, I think Toke, for example, in Oiko has more years of coaching than I've years alive. So I think I'm trying to still discover my path. I know I have some foundations, obviously, and some values that are non-negotiable. I'm a coach that likes to create emotional connections with the player, and I like to believe that I'm a demanding coach and a positive one, someone that helps them to develop, that can actually create a good environment so they can develop, and that at the end of the day, that anyone that was coached by me, at least, and here obviously everyone has his football opinions, but at least he's going to say that I'm a good person.
You said also you have been in a Silvas team, so and what is your understanding of data and information? How do you use data in your coaching?
We need to be aware that this was 2011, 2012, so data changed.
Yeah, on the past
15 years. Data is a fantastic thing, but at the same time, very dangerous one, okay? Data tells you what you want data to tell you. It's the problem are not the numbers, it's the way you look at it, okay? And obviously it's a fantastic tool for you. And I use it a lot. I use it a lot, but it's not the main thing that guides my methodology. It's something that supports my things. It's something that maybe gets my attention when I analyze it a bit deeply. That maybe I'm not doing this as well as I think we're doing, or maybe as bad as we think I'm doing. And a concrete example is yesterday's match against Klubi. I felt we were fantastic because we were humble enough to recognize that yesterday it was difficult to fight with Klubi in ball possession. And that they created some goal chances. We were a bit lucky, but at the end of the day, the expected goals is higher on our side. So actually, in these cases, it's good for me to not to change the opinion I have for the game, but actually giving me another perspective. But I will never guide my process or through data, or will never guide my process with the data we have access to at this point. Maybe if data changes in the future, it can be a bit different, but we in Portugal are used and we grew up by analyzing more the qualitative side rather than the quantitative one. I think related to stats, I think that's a bit more American culture, that's a bit more British, German culture side of it. Subjective side of football.
Couple of questions still, and one is your objectives and dreams as a coach. How do you see yourself at 2030? Where is Gonzalo Pereira?
Hopefully in some team that plays European competitions.
That's a good answer.
I only have one dream, Yoko, which is to have a stable career that I can pay my bills with. This is the dream. Then I have some goals that I want to reach. Definitely playing European competitions is one of them in medium term. Short/medium aims, I want to be in the highest division of football European country. And I think we might have a good opportunity in Latte to do that. And then to keep developing, keep learning from different people, not only on a tactical wise, but also relation wise with players, because this is something I spend a lot of time thinking about. that can allow my development as coach, because I truly believe that every people is going to have their key opportunity to transform their lives. And then it's about either you're ready to answer and to strive and to be successful in that context, or you're not. And I need to make sure I'm going to be ready when this opportunity comes.
And the last one, what are your tips to coaches who want to have an international coaching career in Finland? Finnish coaches, junior coaches or coaches whatsoever. What are your main tips to them?
Make mistakes, make a lot of mistakes, analyze it, correct it, make those mistakes again until you don't make them anymore, and don't think too much. And by not thinking too much is if you get an opportunity, go for it. Because if we start putting or in the scale, family side and this and that, then you'll never leave your comfort and comfort zone. And here I'm talking by experience.
Take risks.
Yeah, just go, because football is an environment of risks. Football is maybe an environment that only gives you a good opportunity for you to develop and a good opportunity for you to have a career, and you need to take it. Life is too long at the same time, too short for you to lose time with
the momentum.
Overthinking.
Yeah, overthinking. Yeah, that's a good tip for do not overthink, just go. Like a Nike slogan. Just do it.
Exactly. Just do it.
Yeah. Thank you, Gonzalo Pereira. It was very, very nice and very insightful to discuss with you about football in Finland and globally. And I wish you a very good season at FC Lahti.
Thank you very much. Once again, thanks for the invitation. It was quite fun to talk about Finnish football a bit deeper. Also about to share my own experience from Portugal and from other Nordic countries. And I hope people that will listen to this that will always or also enjoy it and learn something from it.
Thank you.
Thank you.